Hello and welcome to the Two Vegans. This is episode 35.
You're totally throwing me off with this now. Like, I was lost, but I'm so glad you picked it because I actually genuinely have no idea what episode this is.
Me neither, because I'm just assuming it's 35. We ought to reach
We
35
really,
at this
we.
stage.
No, I think we have. This might actually be 36, but regardless of that, we really should be getting better at least this bit. I don't know why we can't seem to do that. No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Except Chirag.
So how are you, Hito?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay too. Fresh from watching Seaspiracy.
Yeah, it really depressed me.
Okay, I have a question. Yes, of course it would have depressed you, but did it surprise you?
No, not at all.
So that was the thing, right? Just incidentally, obviously, it's been a little bit of the talk of the town, right? There've been quite a few people talking about it since it released a few weeks ago. I've been seeing posts, seeing a lot of stuff, and a lot of people like were just really, really shocked by the fact that, you know, what they believed to be sustainable fishing wasn't sustainable. But you know, I mean, this is something we've talked about many times, right? And I like for me, it was like I finally had a conversation with somebody literally yesterday. Something happened about food, and I reminded the person. I was like, "Well, no, I'm vegan, so I wouldn't eat that." I was like, "Oh, by the way," because apparently, you know, natural reaction to saying you're vegan is, "Oh, did you watch Seaspiracy?" And I was like, "No, I'm going to watch it tomorrow." But it was just funny. But we're like, "Oh man, yeah, like it was so depressing. Like I was so shocked." And I was like, "Really? Okay." So, you know, much like Game Changers, I think it's been one of those things where a lot of people were just like, whoa, it had no idea. And I was sitting there going like, that sucks, but I mean, come on. Like, how did you not know that, you know?
Yeah, I had some similar, but I don't have many friends here. But a couple of people that I spoke to, and
Oh,
they were also
did you
like,
mean in Amsterdam where you are now?
yeah. Oh, right, okay. Oh,
Okay.
sure. I'm also apparently very slow in Amsterdam.
It's the cold, it's not you.
Yeah, that is true. That is a bit, I mean, it snows in April, like, what the
Okay.
hell? This is for another day. But yeah, so I had a couple of people telling me the same thing and also putting up on their Facebook and saying, oh my God, instant revelations. And have you guys watched Seaspiracy? And then never really knew that I was contributing financially to this industry. And I was like, okay, this is great. You know, people are now talking about it, it's affecting them. And then the next day, they put up a picture of horse riding and I don't know, eating like non-vegan food. And you just tend to wonder, like, what is it that has made us like that? You know, what is
Well,
it that
yeah, you know,
actually.
cognitive dissonance is very real, right? It's and that dissonance exists even between the different kinds of, you know, food
I don't
groups, so
think
to
at
speak.
this stage it's cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance, I feel like kind of emerges from ignorance to a certain extent. And if you don't see enough of the massacre that you are contributing to, if you don't see enough graphical images, if you don't see stuff like that, if you
Yeah.
don't read stuff like that, then it's easier to kind of indulge in cognitive dissonance. But when you do see it, and when you just know it, it's just bare facts on the table, and then you're still going ahead and not doing anything about it. And that's when, like, this is a little twisted, you know? Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Why is your convenience and your taste so important? Like, how much are they controlling you? You know, just it's just a mental game, and it kind of blows my mind.
So I think there's a couple of things here. So by the way, the people at your end were better than what I saw over here because I saw someone post about Seaspiracy, and the very next day go to a seafood restaurant and post pictures from there. And by the way, so here it was not a case of there's a disconnect and I'm now thinking, you know, like I'm seeing seafood and whatever, but it was more a case of like, oh my God, this was like one of the most amazing meals I've had. I know I watched Seaspiracy yesterday, but like, I can't give this up. And it was just one of those things where you're, you know, so, I mean, that's kind of the upper limit there. So I just wanted to kind of point that out.
But that's, sorry to interrupt, but that's it, right? Like, this person is being controlled by their taste buds. Mm-hmm. Nothing else but their taste buds. I mean,
the taste buds and a lot of, I think, conditioning of the fact that, like, good food is, whether you look at it as something you're entitled to or just the fact that, like, it's so normalized that, yeah, I know I saw something a little bit ghastly. I mean, listen, we grew up, well, at least when we were growing up as kids, you didn't get, like, sort of factory, you got factory farm meat, but what I mean is you didn't get, like, boxed meat in plastic wrapping in the stores, right? You went to a butcher. Right. And at a butcher, you invariably had upside down carcasses of stuff hanging from the walls. And that didn't stop anybody from being like, huh, you know, that looks like a, I mean, you know, there's a whole tradition in the US, especially if you look in some states, about, you know, roasting a pig or a certain kind of meat on the spit, like as a whole. Right. So the view of a carcass is something that there is this, I don't have the word for it, but you know what I mean. That there is this feeling of like, oh, that's fine. I'm entitled to that, right? And so that entitlement goes way above the fact that ultimately I'm doing this to survive, or I'm doing the, I mean, now it's become fine dining, but I'm saying at the time. And that's okay. I'm allowed to do that because my survival is more important. And we've talked about sort of this kind of, you know, difference between the species. With regards to cognitive dissonance, what I meant is just like, I mean, we talk about this a lot of all the time, where we talk about these like, oh my God, I'm an animal lover. I love my dogs and cats. Let's go eat steak. And that kind of, you know, like the thing that happens like within hours of each other, and you sit there going like, wait, how does, and they, but that connect is what I mean is not being made. So when you say like, oh, I watch Seaspiracy. Oh my God, I didn't realize I was contributing to the industry, but now I'm going to eat chicken or whatever. There's a bit of a disconnect there where they don't equate these things together. And I want to talk a little bit about that because that's something that came up. Or maybe we can kick off with that because I think that's something that came up. So towards the very end of, sort of in the latter end of the, documentary, you know, he finally spots, he goes to this, I think it's in Denmark, right? Where he goes to this sort of old style whaling spot. And stuff, and then he sits down with this whaler, right? And he's kind of explaining how one whale produces the same amount of meat as 2,000 chickens or something. And he's like, well, you know, so if I have to compare the two, it's like one life versus 2,000 lives. I'll easily do one life. And I'm just like, hold on, no, stop, wait, what? And it was this kind of like this thing where like, well, I'm doing this for sustenance, and I'm okay with it because I'm killing one over 2,000. And then, like, he actually, in the same breath, then goes on to say, like, for me, one life is one life and it's equal. Like, one chicken is the same thing as one whale is the same thing as one other thing. 2 minutes later. But 2 minutes prior to that, he was like, well, I'd rather kill one of this than 2,000 chickens. And I had so many problems with what he said because, A, like, that equation, I'm like, who, first of all, like, where do we get to make these kind of equations? These are not math problems. These are, you know, these are lives. But then as a secondary point is like, you know, you are saying it as if by killing this one whale, you actually save the lives of 2,000 chickens. You don't. The chickens are getting killed anyway, right? They're not separate things that are happening. It's like, I'm doing this, therefore I now save 2,000. No, you didn't. You didn't make any kind of equation. You just killed one whale. And that's all you did. And so for me, like, that was kind of that, again, going back to that sort of these kind of weirdo math equations that we kind of set up or humans have set up, that this is better than that and this is okay to this and this meat is okay and that one isn't and we should outrage over dog meat, but let's kill as many cows as we can. And what do you mean deforestation has happening because of this thing? I mean, it's the avocados that are doing it, right? And all of these like weird equation-y things that we are using as ways to justify stuff. Whereas when you hear it coming out of this guy, and I'm just sitting there going like, no, like that's not even, like, that you're not even making the right comparisons.
Yeah, for sure. That was pretty interesting. And I like the fact that they showed his perspective. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's one of the many justifications that people have to, in order to kind of feel better about what they're doing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, this guy is just one part of the problem. It's the end consumer who is to be blamed, right? If he needs to cater to a demand, mm-hmm. which is massive, massive. I mean, how many times have we heard like, oh, I'm a vegetarian, except I eat fish. And, you know, or even I don't like meat, but, you know, fish is okay. Fish is something that I do. It's not a big deal. Like this mental image of fish is unimportant.
No, again, and again, it's back to numbers, right? It's like there's so many fish. Killing one isn't a big deal. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and also you don't realize the importance of a fish in the ecological biosystems.
Right.
You also feel that fish is an unimportant animal that probably does not have the same sense as a mammal, and many other things, right? So over a period of time, you've conditioned, and therefore now you are so okay to eat fish and kill fish that such a documentary was kind of like an eye-opener to show you the volume at which you're doing it. Even though we keep reading in the newspapers every other day, like there will be more plastic than fish by 2050. Like this mental image of the seas being burdened with plastic. But this guy is actually now catering to that kind of demand. And so in order to sleep better at night, he has to say something.
I actually wrote that down because he actually says, I'm a better person than the person that kills 2,000 chickens, right? And it was just one of those like, again, going back to the thing, you by doing this, you're not actually saving 2,000 chickens though, so it doesn't make you even remotely better, you know?
But in his head, he's probably thinking that I could have farmed 2,000 chickens, these unimaginary chickens that I'm saving.
Chickens that he's saving don't exist. Exactly. Yeah, so I think that scene actually, I was starting to get a bit disappointed actually when I was watching that part, even before he interviewed this person. Like, you know, when he's like, we make this final trip and he's like, okay, I'm gonna go and see this olden style, I think he called it a grind, although it's spelled like grind, but anyway, of whaling and to see if the olden practice was quote unquote sustainable, right? And so that's kind of what he does. And I was for a minute getting this feeling that like, oh, is he going to now spin off and say, okay, maybe there is a bit of a sustainable approach to this. And I was obviously very, very disappointed to see the imagery, but at the same time, a little bit maybe less disappointed to see that the conclusion was, I mean, you know, the filmmaker was then sitting in his car and kind of like, whoa, like we're not even valuing a life anymore. And obviously it's very like, it's red water. And you know, that whole process that he witnesses, and he's like, this isn't about the numbers, it's about the life. And I think so he reaches that conclusion, and I think that was something that was just really interesting. I want to talk a little bit about also like this whole kind of sustainable farming thing, because I think that was kind of the crux of the thing as a whole. And I think that like this is something that's come up on the show a couple of times. We've talked specifically for salmon farming, right, and stuff. And we keep hearing this thing about, oh, you know, these fish are sustainably farmed and stuff. And he meets the guy from, I think, the EU sort of climate authority, right? And this is something we've also kind of run through some time back, where we were talking about plastic and that whole kind of the plastic crisis. And it was just very interesting how, you know, he was kind of trying to get the guy. And I know it's a little bit dramatized, obviously, in terms of how they what parts of the interview they show and they don't. But he was trying to explain to this person that like, hey, you know, you keep saying the word sustainable fishing, but is it actually doing anything? Because ultimately the statistics show and the waste shows and the fish population shows and the ecological balance shows that the sustainable fishing thing that you keep advocating for doesn't seem to be working. And his response was, yeah, that's why I advocate for more sustainable fishing. And I just kept hearing that and going like, and I mean, you know, even he mentions like, you know, how is doing more of something that already doesn't work a problem? But even more than that, I was like, what does it mean to say the words more sustainable? What does that even mean as a sentence? Because sustainable fishing implies, and he gives this whole banking, like just amazing example of like banking and saying, you know, you have 100 euro in the bank and as long as you keep doing work with the interest, it's fine. But if you start touching the capital, that's a problem. And that is the definition of sustainable fishing. And I'm like, yo, it is so not, because, you know, you can't compare, you know, what is now even not even actual cash, but electronic money to the lives of fish and that whole kind of ecological balance, which is very delicate. But the idea of like, what does it mean? What does it mean when you say sustainable fishing? Like, at this point, I don't understand. And I think this documentary actually thankfully, perhaps really touches on that as being a key element to say, actually, what the hell is sustainable fishing? And it doesn't make any sense.
So this example that he gives of banking, right, and don't touch the capital, but you've already touched and ruined and screwed the capital like eons ago. I mean, what are you talking about? There is no capital to sustain you any longer. Now you're just exploiting the ocean. You're so much closer to like killing the ocean that this is, forget about your farming, that this entire industry shouldn't exist at this stage. You should just stop or slow down at the very least. And that also reminds me of this entire labeling of the product, where they have these, they give these labels blindly, and they interview this one guy and they're like, do you even know where this is coming from? Something like that. I don't remember, because
it was the one where they do the tuna fishing, which is dolphin safe. But they're like, well, we have no way of actually.
Nobody's really there from their team to actually monitor how many dolphins are being caught while tuna fishing.
Not even caught, but killed. He actually says, we rely on the captain's notes to say, okay, I didn't kill a dolphin, and that's fine.
Yeah, and he's so nonchalant about it. He's just like, yeah, I mean, how else should it be? I'm in an industry and in a company that is basically providing a label to millions and millions of consumers who trust me, but I have no idea whether it's true or not. I mean, that's all right, right? Like, the captain says it, so it must be right. And it's just mind-blowing how blindly we follow these labels and have never questioned them. Sustainable farming, free-ranged eggs, happy chickens, and funny cows, and whatever. And you're just happy. It just gives you your brain a little bit of comfort that, okay, you're not doing something bad.
I picked a better option.
Yeah, I mean, you're a great person. Look at you killing fish, but sustainably.
Yeah, I mean, the label thing was, it also made me question a lot about, just in terms of thinking about these labels and how they work. And you know, we have a similar one. I mean, we have a vegan label as well that is kind of getting dominance, at least in this part of the world. But there's a couple of different ones, right? And then you have the PETA approved ones. And again, there's a lot of question marks being raised about those labels as well. And I do think, by the way, that it's a very tough problem to solve, because I don't mean it only purely from a logistics point of view, but it's the same. Like, I mean, you go back to the health concerns that were raised about sugar about a decade or a decade plus ago, and this idea of saying, okay, well, you know, we're putting cornstarch and all this shit and everything, and we need to kind of mandate, because obviously we had a lot of kids falling sick and obesity and all of these problems. So we need to mandate how we do sugar labeling. And the solution was to say, hey, you know, this is the minimum, this is the cap of content. This is the bar of content, the minimum amount of sugar that you need to report, you know, per whatever. And then you look at something like a Tic Tac, which is essentially just sugar, but they say the serving size is one individual piece of Tic Tac. And because the amount of sugar in that is less than the cutoff that has been set, why is the cutoff not zero? Another story entirely. But the cutoff is, you know, 0.0 something, some decimal point. And because the sugar content in that single serving is less, I can report it as zero, which is just... I don't even know how that went through a series of approvals and meetings, but here we are. That kind of logic to say, like, well, we'll just create a label that complies with something, whether or not that compliance is valid. And again, you see that getting exposed in Seaspiracy as we have no way of monitoring. We have to rely on the captain's word that they didn't kill any dolphins, which, well, you know, leave humans to do that and guess how that turns out. But even when it has been something that is monitored heavily, I mean, you have to look at things like packaging and so on, you still find these kind of little loopholes here and there that allow you to label something as eco-friendly packaging. And you see plastic and you're like, I don't understand how this is eco-friendly. And it's like, well, only the cup is plastic. Everything else is cardboard. So that's why it's eco-friendly. And you're like, okay.
It's eco-friendlier. It's not eco-friendly.
Right. So it's all these like...
Compared to a full
turn of
phrase.
Yeah. Turn of phrases. So that dolphin one was also... was quite surprising. I had a question for you, which I think kind of came out of this, which I think... And again, you know, when we were talking about game changers, if you remember, one of the things we were talking about was the fact that, like, it's not like the value of a plant-based diet to the impact of a non-plant-based diet or impact of a meat-heavy diet and the kind of impact it's having on the environment is, again, something that's not known, but potentially it's something that people are happy to turn a blind eye to. It's more comforting to turn a blind eye to, and so on. And I think one of the things that these guys, or the guy for Seaspiracy, did interestingly was he kind of put the human rights angle on it. You know, so he was talking about the labor and kind of like how this is made sustainable, A, because we're dealing with fish who are in abundance, followed by, you know, weirdo regulations that don't make sense and, you know, rely on the word and whatever. And then the third layer of which is essentially slaves, so slave labor, which is hiring all these people for next to nothing, potentially incentivizing them based on how much they catch, and things like that, that is creating, you know, another layer of problem. And that was interesting on a couple of different fronts, again, because it brings that angle of the story that I think for you and me may not be necessary. I wouldn't say necessary, but like for maybe for people like us, when we're talking about it, we are very, you know, we're okay to talk about the life and kind of figure out that story. But the idea is that, well, ultimately we need to survive. And it raised for me that important question to say, well, if you are doing this fishing in the name of feeding somebody who is impoverished, but then you are hiring slave labor who now cannot pay for their own food, have you actually solved the problem?
Is that a question for me?
No.
Right, because you started off by saying that I have a question for you. You asked
okay,
me this question.
Sorry.
I'm not fishing.
No. Let me rephrase that then. I think what I mean by this, when I say I have a question for you, is like, what did you think of this part? Because I thought it was really interesting that...
Yes, definitely. I mean, veganism is an animal rights movement, right? And that's what we should focus on. But the fact is that we live in a world where there are many, many, many people, majority of them, in fact, that hold human life superior and above animal, non-human animal life. And it's a fact. We can hate it, we can disagree with it, but we cannot deny it, and it exists. And when a majority of population believes in it, then you have to show them what they are not able to see about the cause that they believe in. And since vegans usually consider every life as equal, if there is any life being affected by it, by any sort of an industry that is harming different kinds of animals, then that needs to be spoken about. So I liked the fact that he added the human rights angle, because he's a vegan himself. He probably knows that somebody will come back and say, oh, but what about the humans that are dying in a poor country? And they will always have the country's name ready at the tip of their tongue, because they know which country to use where.
You're not talking from experience at all, are you?
So if this is what you want to see, if this is what is probably going to help change or shift your mindset a little bit, then so be it. But the problem is, and I've always maintained this, right? The problem with the world, there are many problems with the world, but the cause that we are fighting for, which is animal rights, is not one-dimensional. It's never one-dimensional. There is always association with speciesism, capitalism, overpopulation, many other things, right? And unless people don't try and understand all these aspects, they're never going to be able to understand why we are fighting for this cause. The fact that you should be thankful that you have a job that pays you almost close to nothing, at least, is pure capitalist greed, right? You're not funding the guy's income. You're putting that guy into deeper poverty. He does not deserve it, right? There's a reason why developed countries have minimum wages, and underdeveloped or developing countries do not have it, because they exploit human rights, because they're allowed to do so. But just the concept of one human being being paid more money because he has a degree in his pocket versus another human being, let's even put that aside. Let's put that basic disparity of income aside. But such a vast distribution of wealth amongst the rich and the poor is acceptable to you because you think that you're doing a favor on paying the poor guy that much money so that he can eat two times a day, is wrong.
I think, what's interesting, I think, is that this particular representation of that actually takes it even a step further, because it's not just the fact that it's like, oh, you know, you're paying somebody and you're facilitating his ability to whatever, to eat or live a life or whatever, but the fact that, you know, I think it's an interesting point that he's trying to make, which is, you know, by eating fish, just by the sheer act of eating fish, right, not even being involved in the industry, not even fishing, not any of that, but the sheer act of eating fish, you are actually condoning through your wallet slavery, ultimately. And I think that that's a very interesting, because he, you know, when he mentioned slavery, like, he brought up that word, and I thought that was like, wait, what is he going to talk about? Because I was just kind of like, you know, where is he going with that? And that's when, you know, I kind of saw that angle. I think he's trying to push it, that conversation, even further by saying, like, we're not even talking about, yes, income disparity, yes, etc., but it's not about, like, you facilitating anything. You are actually actively monetizing slavery, if that's accurate, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm not even questioning all of that. I obviously don't deny that this industry is funding slavery and labor slavery or slave labor, whatever you call it, and as is a lot of other industries. You can speak of the meat industry, the cow industry, and the trauma and the PTSD that the workers over there have to go through, okay? Because beyond the money aspect of it, these people are working in such pathetic working conditions, killing living beings on a daily basis, seeing blood and gore on a daily basis, and the mental effect that they have is unimaginable, right? And it kind of numbs them so much that they think it's normal. All of that has already been established, so you're anyway funding all of that. But when these corporates come back and say, but oh, look at us, you know, the livelihood of so many people depend on our industry, how can you just ask us to stop? And that's where I'm talking about the fact that there are so many things associated with it. Because then the consumer is like, yeah, you know, I cannot just, the livelihood of farmers and the livelihood of fishermen and this and that.
Yeah, which is an interesting argument, because he didn't really bring that up. And I was wondering if he was going to tackle that, which is like the income of fishermen,
yeah,
which is a standard sort of rebuttal that's given to be like, yeah, but what about the income of all these people who are, you know, for generations being in the fishing industry and are surviving, you know, hand to mouth in that industry. And then, you know, can you take their livelihood away? And I think this was an interesting angle to it, but he didn't make that connection.
No, but he didn't have to reach there. But I'm kind of giving a food for thought to our listeners, if they're still contemplating veganism, is that even if there are certain livelihoods that depend on it, and even if these livelihoods are a little better than what you've seen in that documentary, still does not make it right. There's still so much about wealth distribution and the fact and the mental effect that these jobs have on these workers, which weren't tackled in this, but I think it were tackled on in some other documentary, probably Cowspiracy, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I think, and it's one of those arguments we had spoken about actually when we were talking a lot of stuff, and we were talking about India, but we were also talking about places where the argument, again, the meat industry is like, what about the butchers? What about the, you know, that whole income stream? And you know, the argument I remember, because we had made at the time, was like, you know, if something's wrong, you can't justify it saying, well, someone's earning a living from that. Because, I mean, that argument can be made for child labor, and that argument can be made for racketeering and fraud and prostitution and everything, right? So then that differentiation doesn't exist, in my opinion, in the sense that if something's wrong, we got to solve that problem and then see how we can get these people livelihoods rather than going the other way.
Yeah.
And so the last thing I had written down was sort of this this question that they ask, which I know we've touched on a little bit, which is this whole, like, do fish feel pain? And this argument that, you know, and we've heard this, I know we've talked about this too, like, you know, oh, fish are so many, they don't feel pain, you know, they don't. They're a certain class of animal that doesn't feel pain. You know, plants feel more pain. I mean, I've even heard that one. And sort of that argument. And I was thinking when this person, obviously this woman was explaining how, like, hey, ultimately they have nervous systems. they communicate. I mean, you know, by the way, on a side note, for many, many years, we've been told how dolphins are probably the most intelligent beings. They have complete languages, they communicate and all of this stuff. So again, you know, funny kind of dissonance, but or intentional, like sort of blindness towards it, that you can't say that and also wonder if fish feel pain, for starters. But I was thinking of Finding Nemo when she was saying that, actually. And I was thinking about the fact that, like, you know, on the one hand, we can make this movie about this fish who's separated from his mother and also separated from his father, and this whole journey of, like, trying to track him down. And oh my God, like, Nemo is so cute and Dory is so funny and all of this stuff. And we can make those sort of very funny comparisons with doing that and seeing aquatic life for, in some ways, for all of the beauty that it is, while simultaneously being like, well, you know, fish don't really feel pain though. And you're like, well, yeah. You know, it's, and I don't know, I was just thinking of Finding Nemo and when she was explaining all of that. And I kept thinking to myself, like, you know, this is such an interesting argument. Like, I think you said this once before that, like, you would rather have someone who says, no, I understand it feels pain, but I want to eat it, versus they probably don't feel any pain. It's totally safe if I eat it. You know, I'm helping a butcher's livelihood and these animals are meant to be eaten arguments, you know.
But there are so many fish, no. And I think just connecting to that, just the way the documentary started, which was the save the oceans by reducing your straw consumption of obsession, right? And we've obviously milked that oat enough.
Ooh, look at that.
I know. This should be your opener. But it's just justifications and more justifications. And every day people come up with like this new thing and they're like, oh, look, this is what I found. I'm going to do everything and tell myself everything, but I'm not going to reduce my consumption. I'm not going to think about. And it's mind-boggling that veganism is considered extreme and a cult and this and that by many people. And I'm just trying to go a little bit deeper on different levels and try and understand that since when did the welfare of a living being become extreme? You know, why do you have to take the message from the vegans are, oh, how do you tell you're a vegan? Oh, no, you don't have to. They'll tell yourself, haha. You know, why are you basing all your decisions on the kind of people that you're meeting? Why aren't you basing your decisions on facts, on what is being proved to you over and over and over again? So I kind of find that interesting. Like you said, at the end of the day, it's all boils down to cognitive dissonance, but also a lot to ignorance, greed, consumerism, and also just the scientific facts about addiction. You know, I don't think people are covering this enough, that we're addicted to the food that we eat. And there's always a discouragement in the world about smoking cigarettes because you can be addicted to tobacco. It's not good for your health, alcohol, drugs, hard drugs, soft drugs, whatever. But nobody really talks about the food addiction. And nobody's ever addicted to strawberries. Oh my God, I can't stop eating strawberries. Oh, but strawberries are bad, but I just can't stop myself, right? Instantly you'll stop eating strawberries if you found out tomorrow that people are being killed for strawberry farming. But the fact that cheese addiction, meat addiction, seafood addiction, how are you not thinking that you're actually addicted to this, you know, scientifically? It just blows my mind.
Yeah, and I'm going to link it to this, like, you know, Game Changers came out about a year and a half ago, close to 2 years ago, potentially. So we are a year and a half to 2 years since Game Changers. And I'm sure a lot of people, those who listen and maybe those who don't listen to us, made promises to change on the basis of Game Changers. And so I'm going to put this out there. How many of you are still doing those changes? Because I'd love to know. You know, and of course, absolutely kudos if you are. But I think that even though Game Changers was actually in many ways a game-changing documentary, apologies for the pun, in the conversations I was having around with the people around me and everybody who had seen it and kind of feeling like their eyes had opened, I believe they've all mostly returned back to some semblance of whatever they were doing. And I think that that's something that, you know, I want to kind of remind again that, you know, when we see something like this, it has a very immediate effect on us, but it tapers very quickly. We are very desensitized today. And that's, by the way, it happens with everything. I mean, we can talk about it from a news perspective. We can talk about an injustice perspective. I mean, you know, outrage one day, outrage the another day, find something else for day three and move on. We rarely see follow-ups anyway. And I think that there's a danger, as always, about this thing. I mean, again, both of us shared examples at the start of this about how people who saw it and yet were doing very different things within 24 hours of watching it, that would imply that, like, this had no impact on them. I think that that is something that's very real. I think that is something that's, you know, it probably goes back to, as you said, goes back to almost an addiction towards the fact that the food we eat, and we have that, by the way, it's linked to status, it's linked to the, you know, a lot of things around us. And it's something that we should really be thinking about, because it's one thing to be, you know, tweeting and sharing on Instagram and talking about, oh my God, my jaws dropped and I'm so shocked by all of these statistics that I got shared. But if a week later you're having caviar, I don't think that is really an effective thing. And I don't blame the filmmaker here or anybody else, but I think it's really, really important that, you know, we think about, changing for a few days doesn't really solve anything. And just as much as in the documentary says that stopping drinking from straws doesn't solve anything, we have to move and do that with everything.
Yeah. And I know we're reaching close to time, but there are certain reviews that I was looking up of Seaspiracy, and some of them have kind of said, oh, but this documentary is a bit flawed and it's so dramatized and it's this and it's that. Well, of course, this is also a part of the entertainment industry. To be able to put that point across, you have to add a bit of a shock value. It does not mean that those statistics and the information and the graphics that you've seen yourself are fake. Maybe they are presented in a more dramatized way, but that's how it works, right? And these people do not go on all these silly shows that are produced on a daily basis trying to, I don't know, stuff like 90 Day Fiancé or some stuff like that where you're meeting people.
Oh, okay.
It's shocking, right? I mean, it's not normal. Look at the message that is being given. So if there's someone out there that hasn't watched Seaspiracy yet, do not be fooled by these reviews. They're meant to be critical. This is what their livelihood depends on. So whatever you see in the documentary at the end of the day is and are facts. But most importantly, lives are being taken. And
yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
exactly.
Matters.
I mean, fish are being killed. The red water you saw, the whaling is not what's the, you know, it's that's not being dramatized. The music behind it maybe, but the visuals were real, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I know there were a couple other things that came out of this documentary, and you know, I know these things will come up as well. But yeah, I also didn't actually, I didn't look up any reviews before we did our chat because I didn't want to kind of get into that space. But I was wondering, you know, like it's only a matter of time before somebody comes out and says, well, you know, ultimately the guys who invest in Beyond invest in this. So it's like, that's why it's all fake. So we may deal with that a little bit, but I do agree. I think, you know, of course would love to hear from you if you're listening to this, you know, what you thought of the documentary. I mean, always interested to hear that. But I think when we're thinking of impact and something that's a bit longer term, let this not be, again, yet another cool movie that we checked off our Netflix list and moved away to the bottom of some queue somewhere.
And one last thing, if you're ever in doubt, think of it this way. If you wouldn't do something to yourself or to a fellow human or to a child, then don't do it to an animal.
You can find us on @the.2.vegans on Instagram. You know, we're trying to release some of these videos, so if you're interested in that, you can find us on YouTube as well. Just look for @the2vegans. And of course, we're in your podcast players as always. And we'll be back again soon. This is Bye from Chirag.
I'm Shromital. Ciao.
Ciao.